Welcome to the 98th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. I hope it was plant-based and heart healthy. Maybe a little extra pumpkin pie, so there may have been a little extra sugar in there, but that's an acceptable thing. I know with recipes that we use for pumpkin pies for the holidays, we either use some maple syrup or perhaps even a little brown sugar. And, you know, you can cut that down tremendously from what the recipes indicate on traditional pie recipes and even the recipes on some of the vegan website. You really don't need near as much sugar. Just taste it and you know, and sometimes it's just a matter of backing down a little bit each time and you know, you become accustomed to less sugar in something. So it all works out good. Thanksgiving is always a time of reflection for me, and I do a lot of observing both on social media and in my office and conversations that I have with my friends. And it's a very interesting time of the year. You know, I think I talked about, you know, I've posted which is more important than your turkey or your family. And, you know, a lot of people will are really attached to the turkey. I know one family that became plant-based over the last 3 or 4 months, and their extended family was extremely disappointed and couldn't believe that they weren't going to have a turkey for Thanksgiving. And this was after that particular family had had a bout with colon cancer. And they called and they talked with other family members, said, you know, are we really not going to have a turkey? Can you not believe we're not going to have a turkey? And, you know, even after they explained to them, you know, we did, and they knew that they had become plant-based largely because of the colon cancer, they were still questioning whether or not that they were going to be deprived of a turkey. Even after, you know, finally a frank conversation, you know, it's like none of us really need the turkey. It's not good for anybody here. And, you know, that's a very unfortunate situation because you're not getting very much support from your family. You know, even the cook is making, you know, dinner, but he's, people coming are not happy with what he's serving. You know, their option would have been not to come, but, you know, most of them did come for their Thanksgiving, but they picked around and weren't real supportive. Perhaps this is a starting point for them, and when they got home, they, you know, they reflected that, you know, gee, that wasn't that bad, and, you know, next year we'll try more and start to think about their own health. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Personally, we had the pleasure of having two Thanksgivings, and the first one wasn't traditional, but my son-in-law was traveling with the Georgia State basketball team, so he didn't get in until late Thursday night. So we decided just to have a family dinner together when he got in. And so we, you know, we had rigatonis with my daughter made a great sauce with mushrooms and spinach, and we had that with a giant salad. And so that was a great gathering because he had come back into town and we were up visiting and hadn't seen them for a while. So we were very happy to be together, and we had all day Thursday to go for a run, and you know, it was laid back and nobody was really rushing to cook for the most part. We did a little grocery shopping, but in the morning, but, you know, it was a laid back day, and we watched some football and nobody overate, and it was a great day. And then the next day we got up, which was Friday, where everybody else went Black Friday shopping. We went for another run and had our traditional Thanksgiving day. So we all joined in to make our dish. My daughter made the pumpkin pies, and my mother made the stuffing balls outside of the turkey. We don't have a turkey, so it's no problem. And she makes them with leeks and celery and vegetable broth and bread, and used some flaxseed eggs in them. And my daughter helped make those. They made sweet potatoes. I made mashed potatoes and mushroom gravy. My mother's specialty is always lima beans that are kind of thickened. And basically, that's just with an almond milk and cornstarch type of thickening. That's been traditional in our family. We had cranberry sauce with made with fresh cranberries and walnuts and oranges and celery. We also stopped at a farmer's market on Thursday morning, I guess, outside of Georgia, and it was huge. It was an indoor farmer's market, and they had rows and rows of vegetables, so we got some fresh artichokes, and we got some fresh spinach and fresh sprouts, and so we did roasted Brussels sprouts and made a big spinach salad as well. And of course, we had pumpkin pie for dessert that my daughter made. Oh, and we also had a field roast, and that's by the company Field Roast. So it's made with vegetables and some seitan. So it was very, very tasty and good, and it, you know, was on the table and looked like a roast. So it, you know, held a spot that may have been held for something else in years gone by. But the table was very beautiful, and we had a nice Thanksgiving dinner, and it was very laid back, and it was very enjoyable. We ate a lot, but, you know, unlike when there's a traditional Thanksgiving, you know, you're not so stuffed. You're very, very full, but after dinner, you know, we felt good. And then we went tree shopping for my daughter and son-in-law's first Christmas tree and came back and had pumpkin pie. So it was a great second Thanksgiving day, and, you know, we had 2 days of being thankful for being together. We did a couple runs. One was on the Beltline outside of Atlanta into Piedmont Park, which was downtown Atlanta, and that was great. I mean, it was nice to see so many people out. That was on Thanksgiving Day, running and people playing soccer in the fields, and just a tremendous, and a lot of bike riders, just a tremendous amount of people out. And you know, it's different when I go on my runs in the morning. You know, we see maybe two people. Maybe three if we're lucky, but this, you know, place obviously in the city was crowded with people moving around, so that was really, really fun. And the next day we ran around streets in Decatur. My daughter runs out of Atlanta Running Company Club, and so we started there and did a little loop around Decatur, which was quite cute, and walked around a little bit. So two nice runs up in Atlanta while we were traveling up there, so that makes it all great. The other thing that we were very fortunate of is to have two 80-year-olds with us. I guess nonagenarians at this point, 83 and 82. My mother, my boyfriend's mother, and you know, they're both plant-based and both in good health. And you know, we're able to get through the airport and kind of racing each other up the runway a little bit. It was kind of funny. But it's nice to see how well people can do into their 80s if their nutrition is good. And they both enjoyed the Thanksgiving dinner. And again, you know, nobody missed any turkey or felt left out. And looking back on it, the first night with the rigatonis and sauce, it didn't make any difference what we ate. You know, we had the traditional Thanksgiving dinner because that's on Friday, just because that's what you do, and, you know, we don't have those foods often. But the reality of it is that rigatoni dinner was just as special as the Thanksgiving dinner. It was, but because it was who was around the table, not what we were having. So sometimes I think people get caught up in that. And so, you know, if you're having people over and they're worried about what they're going to eat or what you're going to serve, don't worry about it, because the reality of it is most of the time when people get there, it's who's around the table. And, you know, I hope you're lucky enough to have people around your table that you want around your table and that want to be around your table, and then it won't matter what you serve. The other funny thing that happened was after Thanksgiving, because we had our Thanksgiving dinner on Friday, there weren't any more football games to watch. So we ended up watching a documentary about the Barclays Ultra Marathon. And if you don't know much about ultra marathons, an ultra marathon is defined as anything over 26.2 miles. But the Barclays is one of the hardest ultra marathons in the world, and that the terrain is such that I believe the quote is that the up and down is like climbing Mount Everest twice. And they have, it's a five-loop course of about 26 miles. And it's, again, just this up and down terrain where they go through briars and very steep and rocky. And there's a water crossing. They cross under a prison. It's in Tennessee. It's just terribly, you know, one lap can take someone 13, 14 hours. And it's not marked. There are books along the way where people have to get to certain checkpoints to pull out the page that corresponds with their bib number so that the race director knows that they've made it to all the different checkpoints. And there's only one map, and the night before, people can copy it and use their compasses to locate, you know, or to mark the map for where the checkpoints are. No electronic devices are utilized, so it's just running in a compass and a map. If that weren't difficult enough, you know, adding the terrain and these the conditions. So if you make a loop and you want to stop and you're done, which a lot of people don't make it even a loop, and some make it just one loop and consider it a victory, they call tapping out. And there's actually a guy that plays taps when they start. And so to tell you how difficult, some years there aren't any finishers. This particular documentary was rare because they actually had three finishers. And so it was quite interesting. And, you know, it's one of those things you watch. It's like watching a train wreck. You know, it's can't believe these people are pulling this off and the things that happened to them. But what they talked about and what the race director talked about was the mental challenges of doing something, you know, so extreme as this race. And, you know, how to, you know, your body can do a lot more than your mind often thinks it can. And sometimes, you know, we live in a pretty cushy world. And it's, if you can test your body to this extreme, then some of the daily challenges don't, you know, seem quite as big. Maybe it's easier to deal with some other things that happen in life when you can put yourself through such such a struggle. So it got us all talking about whether we could make it a loop of the Barclays ultramarathon or not, or would we even attempt doing it? And so it was a great conversation to have. There's just a little bit of you would like to think that you'd like to try it, you know, just for a loop. At my age, as my mother would say, there's no way I could finish a Barclays marathon, but it would be nice to see what happened on the course for maybe a loop or a little bit of a loop. So anyway, it led us down the ultra path again. And of course, we're going to do our first ultra, which just is a 50K in April. So it's a step up. So, it led us to download a couple magazines, ultra trail running magazines, and for me to listen to a couple podcasts on ultra running, just to get a little bit more of hearing about these people and their mindsets, because I think it's a wonderful mindset that they have to be able to endure such distances. And there was a particular episode on a podcast that I listened to about a guy that was actually mountaineering and fell 200 feet. And he went to pull on a rock. He was climbing with his friends, and the rock gave way, and he tumbled 200 feet, and he had sustained, pelvis fracture, multiple vertebrae fracture, rib fracture, ankle, broke his ankle, lacerations, you know, you can imagine, had to be airlifted out. But, you know, that part's gory enough. The part that amazed me on the podcast was he was 8 weeks into recovery when he was doing this interview, and he was talking about the good things that happened as a result of him falling. And, you know, to me, that mindset in general, you know, if somebody, so here this guy is an ultra runner racing competitively, and now he's not sure that he'll ever be able to race another ultra. He has no idea what his future holds. Certainly has been laid up and not running. And if you're a runner out there, you know that if you can't run for a few weeks, it tends to drive you crazy. And people can become, you know, grumpy if they're not able to do what they want, regardless of it is what they want. But he was able to talk about the positive things, and the positive things that he talked about was that, you know, his parents were estranged and they kind of came together over the event, and he really bonded with his girlfriend over the recovery. And he's learning to take things, you know, at a day at a time. So, you know, walking, standing up, and then walking to the bathroom, and then walking around the corridors were great feats, and learning to deal with the discomfort. And, you know, it's almost his ultra background in the first place that set him up to be able to deal with adversity and to find a positive outlook, despite all the bad things that, you know, and the tremendous amount of pain the guy had obviously endured. And, you know, he really wasn't focusing. You know, he said, well, when he started to, you know, walk now, and he'd actually, it's 8 weeks, he's done pool running, and he's been for a couple little jogs, which is remarkable for what the guy's through. But, you know, his feet have needles and pins in them when he first starts to move from the, you know, the back injuries, and everything's a little stiff, and the next day things hurt. But, you know, he's going out anyway, and he continues to progress, and he continues to try. And I don't know that he even realized what a motivation his words were for anybody listening to that. You know, so oftentimes I hear people talk about they can't go out and walk because it's too hot. You know, in Florida, it's going to be 80 degrees at 7 a.m. or it's too windy or it's too cold, or they don't live in a nice, you know, area where they want to walk, or, you know, there's a zillion excuses that I've heard as far as people not getting up and moving, or, you know, they have plantar fasciitis, or they have a little injury. You know, this is prime example that it's, you know, your mind, it's mind over matter, and you need to get out and move your body. And, it, you know, chances are it hurts less as you go. So, you know, I'd encourage you to listen to some of these podcasts and watch some certainly watch the Barclays documentary and listen to some podcasts where people do some extreme things. And it's not so much about what they're doing. It's about their mental fortitude, and the positive outlook that they can achieve. And I'll bring that all the way back to, you know, being plant-based. I think that plant-based people in the community in general are a much more positive lot. They're much more accepting. They're willing to try new things. They're eager to try new recipes. So if you take that all the way back to the family that didn't have much support, you know, I you keep plugging along and know that you're doing the right thing. And positive people will start to be attracted to you, and you'll find support. And if it has to start out with being, you know, in a podcast or on the internet or forums or various social medias, then so be it. But keep looking out there, because there are groups that, you know, are happy to get together and share their positive experiences of being plant-based. I received an email this week from a gentleman that is struggling to become plant-based, and he started listening to the podcast, and he's enjoying it, but he's struggling because at his work he has to eat out at lunch, and I presume he's significantly overweight, besides some other health issues. And he's embarrassed to order plant-based because the people that he goes out to lunch with aren't expecting him to order plant-based. And he's afraid of the repercussions of eating that way, and that either how he's perceived, you know, whether he's a fake because he's, you know, he's a big guy and he's ordering a small or a plant-based lunch, which is, that's not him. Or, you know, he's declaring himself and, you know, he's setting himself up for scrutiny, which can be very difficult in starting. And so he asked for advice on how to get started. First of all, I think that it's tremendous that somebody makes the first step to change the way they're eating. And let's face it, if you're significantly overweight, you really didn't get there eating a healthy diet. So that's a given. But if you're willing to change, or you want to change, then you have to make a step somewhere. And I think that deserves an immediate kudos, that you're trying to make a change. And anybody eating with you should give you a kudos at that point, that, you know, it's great that you're trying to pick healthier choices. And that may be the way to go. you know, I'm trying to eat more healthy. I need to do something about my health. I want to regain my health. And, you know, if somebody comes back with something trite or sarcastic to that remark, then one, I'd probably eat someplace, you know, a different location. But otherwise, you know, the other option is just to ignore them because, again, let them watch over time. Because every day that you go into the lunchroom and you order healthy and you're making steps to change, you're a lighthouse for others. So you're making a positive statement that you're starting to eat healthy and you're working on changing, and they're going to see improvements. And it's not going to happen overnight, but it will. And then they're going to start to come around and they'll ask questions about what exactly you are doing. But they'll probably still throw some barbs at you. Because people don't want to hear anything bad about their bad habits. So, you know, those particular people will continue to try to undermine for a while. But let's see what happens a year into this. And, you know, I guess I would challenge that emailer to eat the healthiest lunch he can possibly eat at that lunch table every day for a year. No matter what happens the rest of the day, eat the healthiest lunch you can possibly choose that day, every day for 365 days. And if you have to write it down, and I would write it down in the calendar, or even put it on a Facebook link, you know, or a social media link. I had a healthy lunch today that consisted of blank. And every day that you do that, you will be supporting yourself that you ate a good lunch. And at 365 days, you will feel so good that I would guess and probably put a fair amount of money on that you've extended that to breakfast and extended it to dinner. Might it be perfect every day? Maybe not. But the more you do, the better you'll feel and the more confidence you'll have to continue. And if you have time after that healthy lunch, I would get up and walk around the parking lot and do a few stretches wherever you can, and, you know, have the confidence to start to move. And after work, take the long way around the parking lot to your car, just do a little bit and get started. You can't change others, but it's not an option for others to inhibit you from changing yourself. I would guess there were a lot of family and friends and people that signed up for the Barclays Marathon to say that you're an idiot and you can't do it. But that didn't stop them from signing up and trying. And there were some people that had done it two or three times, or not had done it, but had attempted it two or three times before. And, you know, they were proud of where they got, and they had tremendous resolve about what they were doing, and I think that transfers over to changing the way you eat. You know you're doing something good, so you know, keep trying. Keep training for healthy nutrition. You know, I'll put it out that way. So the more you train, so how do you train to eat healthy? Start with the little things. You know, you can't run, if you're starting to train for a marathon, you can't run 26 miles the first day. You have to do baby steps. So the baby step is make sure every day you're having a healthy breakfast. And, you know, there are 101 ways to make oatmeal. You can make it hot. You can make it cold. There's different fruits that you can add onto it. You know, the basics are there, the oatmeal. And I like the walnuts because I think that's a good time of the morning to add the walnuts and the flaxseed. But, you know, you can change the fruit up. You can make it, you know, for the seasons. It can be a summertime with summer fruits and wintertime with apples and pears and persimmons and pumpkin and a variety of things. But get the breakfast going the right direction. And, you know, lunch is also an easy meal as well. You know, that salad is a really good option. It sounds boring, but the way you fix that is that you add different beans every day to your salad and you change up the dressings. I found a new dressing after going to the last meetup Thanksgiving. A lady there was doing the mustard and horseradish. And that's a great dressing for a salad. So mustard and horseradish and a little vinegar. You can do a little miso. I'm sorry, not miso, but a little tamari with that. Just a little bit because it's salty. So, I mean, you know, a teaspoon of tamari goes a long way. with that combination. So some days I might do vinegar, some days I might do tamari with that. I do ginger dressing some days with ginger and a little tamari and sriracha to make it hot. Some days I just do salsa, fresh salsa on my salad. Some days it's vinegar with Italian spices. It was funny over Thanksgiving. People say, "Oh, what kind of salad dressing did you use?" Well, I just had a really ripe avocado, and my daughter didn't even have balsamic vinegar. We had apple cider vinegar, and I used a little bit of garlic and oregano and basil, and it was a great dressing. So, you know, adding little, you know, nuts and seeds to your salad, you know, a few sesame seeds, a few sunflower seeds can really change up the way a salad tastes. Change the lettuce. Some days do romaine, some days do spinach. We're growing Swiss chard in the garden, and it's beautiful right now. So I go out at lunchtime to play frisbee with the dogs, and I pick some Swiss chard and bring that in and throw that into my salad. So there are a variety of ways to change up that salad, and it's an easy lunch, you know, but make sure you have a tremendous amount of vegetables in it. If you're traveling, there's oatmeal in virtually every place. So Starbucks has oatmeal with two different variety of toppings. Panera has oatmeal with a variety of different toppings. You can even get oatmeal at McDonald's. You can pick up a piece of fruit at the service station to add to oatmeal. Stay away from the bagel. The bagel is just going to bog you down and not give you a lot of nutrients. So just start focusing on eating oatmeal for breakfast from a variety of locations. If you're traveling and at home, change it up with the toppings that you put on it. Cinnamon and raisins are a great way to sweeten your oatmeal. Get away from, you know, I grew up back in the day where the first thing that went on the oatmeal was a heaping probably tablespoon of brown sugar. You know, now I use raisins and cinnamon to sweeten my oatmeal and the fruit. It's perfectly fine. I enjoy it. It's just a matter of wrapping your head around not putting your spoon into the sugar bowl. You know, getting back to the family that has a bunch of naysayers, I think it's a good idea to have a couple copies of some easy books or perhaps documentaries to give to these people that are around your table that are naysayers. You know, there's some very small and inexpensive books that you can ask, you know, hand them out or, you know, give them some websites to check out to look into. One comment was that the small children weren't getting enough protein in their diet. And, you know, again, the American Dietetic Association has stated that a vegan diet and a vegetarian diet are perfectly adequate for all stages of life. It always makes me giggle because it's the same wording that's used on dog food when they say it's sustainable for all stages of life, you know, so you can feed it to your puppy or your dog. Well, so is a vegan and vegetarian diet. It's just a matter of having enough calories and enough varieties. And when I say enough varieties, again, we're looking for whole foods, grains, starches, potatoes, and vegetables from a variety of sources and fruits. Certainly if, you know, you eat Twizzlers and Oreos as a vegan diet, it's not healthy. But if you're eating adequate calories of fruits and vegetables and whole grains, you are going to get adequate nutrition no matter what stage of life. So I have to give you a couple success stories from class. I got an email from one of the students in the class that just finished telling me that he's lost another 6 pounds. He actually drove over from the other coast. Blood pressure's now in the 120s. He's off a couple of his blood pressure medication. Sugar, his glucoses are much improved. Energy is good. He's riding a bike 5 to 6 days a week for 1 to 2 hours. He's now working out in the gym 3 days a week. So it's just motivation all around. He attributes, and I agree with Holy, that he has started to prepare his own food instead of eating out every night. And I think that's huge. You just can't control what you get when you're getting out. You tend to get more calories. You tend to eat more food. You tend to get into the bread. You tend to get more oil. So he's made great strides, and he's starting to enjoy cooking. And once you find out that you can make a few simple meals that taste good and you enjoy, then you'll enjoy making your own food. And you realize that the quality is so much better when you prepare it yourself as opposed to going out. You know, I have no desire to order pizza out because I know I can make a pizza at home so much better. I control what's in the crust. I put it on the grill. It's nice and crunchy. I have fresh vegetables, spinach and mushrooms and peppers and tomatoes, fresh basil out of the garden to put on the pizza. And, it tastes so much better. Why would I want to order one out? Last night, we made a falafel. I had control of it. I used chickpeas of my own, parsley, from my garden, lemon. We baked them so there's no oil. Put them in a pita. We got a pita bread from this place called Sammy's. It's out of Tampa, which is a no-oil thin pita bread. I made the white sauce for the cucumbers and parsley and tomatoes using hemp seeds, lemon juice, and a little tahini, and it was excellent. Also some spices, some cumin, ground coriander. So that was all really, really good. You can't go out and get something like that and have control over the quality of food and the extra, if it had been a ton of oil in it otherwise. And if you look at recipes that you like and there's oil in them, just take the oil out. I promise you it works just fine. From an endurance aspect, we have the Sacramento or the California International Marathon in Sacramento this weekend, so we'll be traveling out there. I'm not quite as recovered as I would like to be from the Ironman. I got a little bit of Achilles niggle going on. It seems to get better the longer I run, but I've not been able to do any speed work for fear of making things worse. So yeah, it'll be a good marathon to see the sights and just be able to run and enjoy and finish and see all the fast runners. A lot of fast runners go out there for that race. It's a Boston qualifier, but that's not something I'll be looking to do. And then we come back and we do a holiday half marathon the next weekend in Clearwater, Florida, and that's fun. Get to wear some elf ears and, again, just probably get through that at no great pace, but, again, enjoy the scenery along the way and then put up some Christmas decorations. I'm still doing the push-up challenge. Today was day 82 at 34 push-ups. I actually sneak a few more sets of 10 in during the day, but I do 34 at the time with the dogs in the morning after my run, and people are still interested and find it motivational, so I'll keep doing it as long as there's some positive feedback. It has helped me with regard to my shoulders. I think they're more mobile, and certainly, I've gained some strength from it. I continue to do planks and mobility type things during the day as well, or in the evening to try to get my shoulders and upper back. You know, when you're hunched over a computer, like I'm sure many of you are, you tend to lose mobility in your thoracic spine, the top part of your spine. And certainly your hip flexors become tight, so I focus on those in the evening. Again, with this Achilles issue, I have been trying to roll out my lower leg and do some stretching as well. I'm not sure exactly what caused it. I wear a pretty flat shoe, and it's pretty minimalist, and I probably have been doing more miles perhaps on those shoes, maybe wore them a little too long, and got myself into a little bit of trouble. I tend to have joints that are a little bit loose. So probably my lack of precision running and overuse combination, but this too shall pass. But the idea is to continue to work on mobility as far as hip flexors and shoulders and upper back. So I think that's really important. I think I talked with my son-in-law as a strength and condition coach. And, we talked to the importance of hip flexors and strengthening those. You can look it up, exercise called the hollow rock, which basically you kind of make your body into a C. So you're laying on your back and your arms are extended over your head and your legs are off the ground and you're kind of in a C position maybe like a very weak C, and try to hold that and breathe through that and keeping your lower back on the ground. And you'll feel that in your lower back, and you'll feel that in your lower abdomen, and that's kind of where those hip flexors are. And if you start to apply that to your running and to your cycling, you'll notice a big difference, because I talked about last week, you have this fascia layer, and if you can get everything moving together in your body in concert, you'll be a lot more efficient and a lot quicker and stronger in your movements. So give it a try. Again, every week I'm going to preach to move your body and try to keep your range of motion. Look at little kids. If you have a chance to look at a little kid and how they squat and how they sit down and the movements, you should be able to do that. I was thinking, this morning, why shouldn't we be able to keep our bodies as mobile as a child's? We talk about aging and losing range of motion, but is that just because we don't use it and we eat poorly and, there's injuries because of that? So our body regenerates itself and we get new tissues every day, cell by cell. So if you start to develop good patterns of range of motion and you're eating healthy and you pay attention, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to regain a lot of mobility of your youth. I see people coming in every day. I saw a guy today in the hospital. His head was almost on his chest because he sits in front of a computer 8 hours a day. There's a lot of reasons he doesn't feel well, and so he just sits in front of the computer. So his head was actually on his chest, and he didn't even realize it, and he kind of had to gaze up at me without changing it, without bringing his head up. And if you looked at the back of his spine, was a very sharp C up as opposed to being straight. And his thoracic spine was all locked in. And so, even driving a car would be difficult for him with the lack of mobility that he has. And he wasn't that old. When I do stress tests on people, I always nag at them because of their posture, because they'll lean over like people lean over on a grocery cart. And so they'll be bent. Like a C when they're walking, instead of straight up and having their hips tucked under themselves. So be conscious of your hips. This is Gretch helping me out. But be conscious when you're walking that your waist is tucked up like it was if you were carrying a bucket of water and everything is straight, as opposed to with the water pouring out, because your waist and if you imagine that as being a circle full of water, it's not tilted forward so much. And look around when you're in the grocery store at all the bad postures that people have. They'll be leaning on that cart and how bad that is. Look at their lumbar spine after that and see just what terrible stress and strain it puts on the low back when people walk leaning on a cart. It's much worse than standing up straight and holding on. Okay, so now you're going to have to go to Christmas parties in the next couple of weeks, and you're panicked because you don't know what you're going to eat when you get there, or you think you're going to fall off the wagon when you do get there. So bring a covered dish, and some ideas for a covered dish to bring to a Christmas party. A vegetable tray shaped like a tree or a wreath, and you can make a dipping sauce out of hummus or tofu and dill, and a little bit of hemp seeds that way. It's kind of like my gyro dressing. You can do a spinach dip in a pumpernickel bread. And I would do the spinach dip. You can, use some tofu and hemp seeds and lemon juice there. Stuff mushroom caps with tofu and spinach. That's excellent. A plate of tomato, basil, and vinegar, balsamic vinegar. You can do that either baked or raw. You can add onions, to red onions to that, and make that very festive looking. Maybe throw a little few olives around that. We do stuffed manicotti with tofu spinach filling. You can make a cheese ball out of cashew and sun-dried tomatoes. You can roll it in white sesame seeds. For Halloween, I rolled it in black sesame seeds and kind of made a spider, but you could actually make a snowball and roll it in white sesame seeds and use pimento or small red peppers for buttons to make it red, and that would look good. Put some basil on the side or some greenery around it. Spring rolls are fantastic, and they're beautiful. You can stuff them with red and green peppers to make them festive. You can use collard wraps to instead of the rice paper to also make things look festive. You can do sunflower balls, like sunflower meatballs, and do a sauce with that to bring as a warm dish. FYI, do not put the sunflower balls in the meat sauce. Let them take that the sauce and put it on. Otherwise, they will disintegrate. Can always take hummus and some toasted pita bread. Make the hummus more festive with red peppers and some green peppers. So there's a few ideas to get you started. And next week I'll add a few more onto that. And hopefully you'll enjoy your Christmas holidays plant-based and plant strong. Don't forget, if you want to email me, I'm at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. My website is drdulaney.com, and that's spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R. We have put tickets up for our January 21st all-day conference at Twin Isles Country Club with Dr. Michael Clapper and Timmery Hagenberger. That's an all-day event with a plant-based Plant Strong, great breakfast and lunch and cooking demonstrations, lectures, group discussion, question and answer. It'll prove to be a great day. You can come and spend the weekend. There's plenty of hotels around. The tickets are up right now. We have 200 slots available on eventbrite.com. So get your tickets now. They're great Christmas presents. And hope to see you there and meet you in person. So we'll start next week with a race report, hopefully a good one. So eat plants strong, get some exercise, and move all your body parts.